listeners, welcome to another installment of Queer Talk Radio. This is Carter Witt, and I'm going to be your guest host today. And joining me is Brian Hooper. And careful I get all these titles right. So Brian has recently, in the last year, relocated to Nashville, and he brings to Nashville skills as having a master's in divinity and a master's in science and a doctorate in psychology. And he's a fellow with the American Association of Pastoral Counselors. Welcome, Mr. Hooper, or should I say Dr. Hooper?
How about Brian?
Brian?
I like that, Carter.
Okay, we'll keep it casual.
All right.
So, sir, you've recently, you told me earlier, 6 to 8 months ago?
I moved in June.
In June.
Last year.
Uh-huh. A year ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's a lovely, what brought you to Nashville?
A couple of things. After finishing my training as a fellow of the Association of Pastoral Counselors and being licensed in Tennessee as a clinical pastoral therapist, and then looking at the 6 states that do license us, I decided that Tennessee would be a great place, and my elderly parents needed to go into assisted living. And so I packed them up and moved them here, and they're in a wonderful place, and I've got a private practice going. And I'm also part-time at First Lutheran Church in Nashville as the Minister of Pastoral Care, and I'm enjoying that immensely, too.
Well, so Nashville is benefiting from your relocation in wonderful ways.
And we are, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to Middle Tennessee a year late.
Thank you. Yeah.
So it's fascinating. You are bringing together religious concepts and clinical psychology concepts.
That's fair to say that, sure.
Uh-huh. And how did you mix the two together?
Well, it goes way back, and I'll try to give you the thumbnail sketch. It goes way back to when I was in high school, and, you know, I felt that proverbial call to ministry. But at the same time, I was interested in counseling and psychology. And I thought, well, you know, I'm going to do that which is of eternal value. So I went off to the seminary. And at that time I knew I was gay, but I had not really integrated that into my life and figured out what that meant. So I went off to a very conservative Lutheran seminary and pursued ordination and was ordained, and then had to go through a crisis of faith, which was really a wonderful experience. It made me a much better pastor because I did that. And I'm happy to say that in 2009, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America decided to be fully inclusive of gay and lesbian people. So I have since become a rostered clergy person in that denomination. And while I was in the ministry, I completed studies that allowed me to go on for the fellow training and then ultimately to become a clinical pastoral therapist. So what I seek to do is to bring the insights of clinical counseling and the wisdom of a person's religious or spiritual tradition together to help them work through life's issues and to become the most whole people that they can be.
Wow. Wow. And that's a pretty tall order for some folks, I guess.
I think it's a very tall order for all of us to be, fully human and fully alive. One of the saints that goes back to the 5th century of the church, St. Irenaeus of Lyon, said that a man, and I think, he would say a woman today, whoever, a person, the glory of God is a person who is fully alive. And I believe ultimately healthy spirituality, no matter what the religion is, Carter. And I work with people regardless of what their religion is or isn't. Maybe they just describe themselves as spiritual or even questioning. This is not about dogmatism, but it is about looking at the underlying spiritual dynamics that people can utilize to help them be really fully alive. And that's what I'm working with when I'm helping people work through their psychological stressors.
Right.
Yeah.
And so... in your private practice,
mm-hmm.
Should we say non-clerical practice? Or
Private practice is fine.
It's fine. This is GLBT focused or broad, everyone focused?
So I work with individuals and couples, gay and straight, but I really have a passion as a gay man for working with conflicted gay and lesbian people and their families and helping them experience greater reconciliation and healing and growth and wholeness. Those are really key words for my ministry, for my life, and also for my private practice. reconciliation, healing, and growth and wholeness. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that how would you want to shape that out a little bit for me? The growth and wholeness.
Where do you... Sure. You know, having worked through a lot of my own conflicts, I know the contours of the journeys that people go on. And again, it's regardless of what the religion is, it's the same experiences on the journey tend to underlie a multitude of different religious experiences that people have, you know, backgrounds that they have. Yeah. So I work with what I call four pillars of spirituality. And the four pillars that I work with, and this is not original with me, this really is derivative from the philosopher Lonergan's work, vis-a-vis Daniel Hemeniak. And if people have read what the Bible really says about homosexuality, with the title of the book, that's by Daniel Hemeniak.
Right.
So I'll give a shout-out to Daniel if he might be listening today and say, good work, thank you for what you've done to assist me and others on the journey. But Lonergan's work, and the way I define it, is to say healthy spirituality is about being awake, thoughtful, reasonable, and responsible. And I think one of the challenges that a lot of folks have if they're coming from a religious background is they may have experienced a religion that tells them, no, please don't wake up. Don't wake up to your lived experience. Let that sleep, you know. That's really not acceptable. And so that bifurcates people in their sense of who they are. It's fractioning. It's disintegrative. I call what I do integrative pastoral counseling, and that's disintegrative. So one of the first steps is just to help people be awake to it.
Right. And help me with that a little
bit. Yeah, sure.
And you're not necessarily saying being awake to your GLBT sexuality, but to wake to elements in your life in general that may not fit with the religion, or
I would say, yes, all of that,
all of that,
right. So this is not, you know, while I have an interest and focus in the LGBTQ community or communities, these are principles that I think are just about being human.
Right.
To be a human is to be a spiritual being, from my perspective. And so we want to wake up to all of what life is about. There's a great little dialogue that goes on between the Zen master and the disciple that Richard Rohr talks about in one of his books. And the disciple says to the Zen master, is there anything I can do to become enlightened? And the Zen master says, you can do nothing more to become enlightened than you can to make the sun rise in the morning. And then the student says, then what's the point of going through all these spiritual exercises? And the master says, so that when the sun rises in the morning, you'll be awake.
You'll be awake.
You'll be
wonderful.
Awake. Yeah. And so, and I really believe, from my perspective as a Christian person, life is always about death and resurrection. And that means that old patterns have to die in order to come into the fullness of life. You know, it's a metaphor. And if people take it historically, literally, you know, fine. If they don't, fine. I work with folks where they are. The important point is the transformative experience that takes place on the journey of life. You know, the word transformation comes from two words, you know, to make a transit. To make a crossing, a journey, and then to form. And who we are is formed by what happens as we traverse that journey of life. And that's exciting. We spend very little time arriving, but we spend a lot of time on the journey. So we need to be awake on the journey. I'm sorry. I'm just sort of.
No, that was one of those things. Like, you know, okay, what do you mean by awake?
Yeah.
And when you're awake, then you are aware.
Right.
And is that your surroundings, your thoughts, your life, or again, all of the above?
I think it means you're intellectually aware. You're visually noticing. You're hearing not just with your ears, but with your heart to what people have to say. In the silence, you. Person feels comfortable because the silence isn't empty, it's full. I was for 17 years the a campus pastor for the Lutheran community at the University of California, San Diego, and I absolutely loved it. I loved working with undergraduates and grad students. I learned so much from my doctoral students. I don't mean that I was their teacher, but they were you know, doctoral students and postdocs that were part of the community. I would learn so much from them that every day was a chance for me to become more alive because the world kept getting bigger as I, you know, got more information.
Right.
And I'll never forget an undergrad who came to me once. She was a science education major, and her passion was biology, and she was looking forward to teaching science in the classroom. And she had been part of, gotten wrapped up in, and I say this advisedly, what ultimately was a cult.
Yeah.
That was very well known among all the religious communities on campus. And they were telling her that because at UCSD she was learning the principles of evolution, that was all wrong, and she had to drop out of school and give all that up, you know. And what a joy it was to say to her, no, you don't have to put your brain on the shelf. Utilize the brain you've been given and evaluate all of that. The long and short of it is she gave that up. She went off, finished her college work at UCSD, and I had the privilege of presiding at her wedding. And her husband is also a master teacher in science and biology. And
sweet.
We're still connected, you know. Yeah. It's awesome.
That's
yeah,
cute.
It's awesome.
So we're awake, we're aware.
We're awake, thoughtful.
Thoughtful.
We're reasonable about what we think about, and then we're responsible with what we do with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when I say responsible, which it's really about being able to respond to what we are awake, thoughtful, and reasonable about in a way which promotes wholeness and well-being for all people, for ourselves and for others, you know?
That golden rule, Elvin.
The golden rule stuff, right, right.
Cute.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so this is your distilling of other philosophy and things people have thought of before, but you're bringing it into
right. Right.
Nice.
I think the mark of a real, you know, a good clinician, which I try to be,
right,
is to take things and to put them in forms that people can make some use of in their lives. So I'll happily give credit where credit's due. I've told Daniel Hominiak, who you know, I joke with him one day. I said, Daniel, one of the books he'd written was dealing with philosophy and faith and ethics, and I said, forgive me that the title is slipping me at the moment, but I said to him, Daniel, it's a great book, but I said, buddy, it's really pretty complicated stuff. And he said to me, well, I thought I made it, you know, really kind of very easy to understand. I said, yes, coming from a man with, you know, a doctorate from Rome and another one from a major university, I understand that. But we need to still this so that I can understand it. So I told him I'm going to write the chicken soup version, or chicken soup for the soul version,
okay,
of his book. And
right,
you may see that someday.
Bring it down here to the rest of us.
Yeah, and for me too.
Right.
For me too.
That's wonderful. Right. So one of the things that I think is kind of interesting is you talk about approaching a psycho-spiritual integration.
Yeah.
Explain that one to me, please.
Yeah, psychosexual spiritual integration.
Okay,
right. Okay. Well, that does go back to those four pillars, okay?
All right.
So when we have somebody who, you know, a young woman, a young man who begins to come to grips with who they are sexually, and if they're coming from a religious tradition that would squelch that and say, no, leave that asleep, then we're really, they're experiencing violence to their own integration of what they're awake to, okay, which then can result in things like anxiety and depression manifest in their lives. We know through the wonderful work of the Parental Acceptance Project, and I'll give a shout out to them as well. You can Google that and find it.
Mm-hmm.
That where there is parental acceptance, even if there isn't agreement by the parents, if they'll just accept their children where they are, suicide rates go down. Risky sexual behavior goes down. Homelessness goes down, and clinical depression goes down as well. Okay, so does that begin to give a good example of that psycho-spiritual sexual integration?
Right.
Yeah.
So pulling, you know, being again, it's back to being aware.
It is back to being aware.
And by being aware, you can integrate those elements yourself and your world and live through it.
Right. And, one of the things that people can do is they utilize healthy expressions of spirituality, no matter what the religion is, is that they can learn to have compassion on for themselves while they're working on their issues, that it can be okay not to know all of the answers, that they can accept themselves where they are, while they're working things through, when they're trying to figure out what it is they do to be responsible with who they found themselves to be. And maybe they go through some experimentation. If we can help them have an accepting attitude towards that, knowing that it's part of the journey that they're going through, that can help lessen issues of shame and guilt so that they can be more self-actualized folks.
Right.
Yeah.
Remove some of that stifling burden and let them be themselves.
That's right. Cool. Exactly.
Cool. Wow. Well, you certainly have a lot of passion about your work, and you've dived into it into a great way. I find that very heartening to listen to you talking about it today, because it's all new topics to me to some degree. So it's really a beautiful explanation.
Well, it's a real privilege, Carter, to chat with you, and you're easy to talk to. And I just have the sense that folks who are listening, they're being a receptive and loving audience, and I'm grateful for that.
Oh, cool. Cool. I thought it was very interesting. You also use hypnotherapy in your practice?
Yeah. People have asked me, and remember, I've been a Lutheran pastor for 27 years, so I've done a lot of work up in the pulpit. A lot of sermons have been preached.
Right.
And I will say, even through my journey, I'm kind of proud to be able to say, and grateful to be able to say that I've always said affirming, accepted things about the LGBT community, even when I was, not so sure what I was going to do with myself.
Right.
You know, but in all of that, preaching, people have said to me, so how is it that a Lutheran pastor gets into hypnosis? And I said, well, I decided at one point I've been putting people to sleep for so many years. I might as well get some training. No, that's kind of my smart aleck response. But I didn't get any training in hypnosis when I did my psychology studies. But somebody else who's a friend of mine and an outstanding lay hypnotherapist, as I've talked with him and learned more about it, I became fascinated. And what I recognized was that we are always hypnotizing ourselves. We're always giving ourselves a speech, telling ourselves something. So if we can find ways to be intentional about that, we can, in a positive way, program our subconscious to be more integrated. So that's how it is that I got into the study of hypnosis. And if people are wondering what hypnosis is...
Yeah, I was going to go back to that, how we do it to ourselves already.
Right. Okay, so it's, first of all, let me give you just a quick example of a hypnotic state, an altered state of consciousness. You're driving down the freeway, you miss your exit, and you say to yourself a quarter of a mile later, where was I? I was lost in thought. Okay? You were deeply relaxed, and you were highly focused on something. You were living out some scene in some other place, even though you were behind the wheel driving.
Right.
And if anything had happened, if the brake lights and the semi in front of you had gone on, you would immediately have responded appropriately in that situation. Okay, so this is a very mild sort of hypnotic state. And we go into a theater. We suspend disbelief. We get caught up in what's going on the screen. We become emotional with the characters when they cry, or we laugh with them. That's an altered state or a mild hypnotic state again. So all we're doing is utilizing the natural human capacity to go into that state in a way which is in agreement with what our client's goals are, to help them, in a sense, reprogram the software so that the picture of their lives that shows up on the screen begins to take the form that they'd like that to take. A simple example might be somebody comes to me for smoking cessation, and they are absolutely committed to that.
Right.
In a hypnotic state, I would help them experience now, in that state, what it's like to be smoke-free, so that when they are out in the rest of their lives, outside of session, they begin to experience what they've already pre-experienced in the hypnotic state. It's kind of like a rehearsal, but it's more vivid than just a mental exercise, because we're involving all of who they are in that relaxed state.
So in a sort of subconscious, tapping into an individual's subconscious, you're helping them sort of develop a memory of where they would like to be going?
Right. I call it a future memory.
Okay.
Yeah, they
okay.
begin to... So that when they get out there, they're really rehearsing something they've, in a sense, been through before.
Okay.
And I will say something. I've discovered that there are a lot of Christian folks who, you know, they hear hypnosis and they go running because they've been told that's how the devil gets in.
Right,
you know.
Right.
And if people do have those kind of questions, they can contact me. I've given a whole talk for a couple of different hypnosis organizations that address that using Christian scriptures that respond to their concerns, because a lot of the scriptures have been taken out of context that are quoted against hypnosis that have nothing to do with hypnosis at all.
Right.
I will say, you know, Paul says, be transformed by the renewal of your mind. And that's a passage that I do look at and say, this is just one way to think about the things that we think about, you know,
right,
and begin to rethink the things we think about at a deep level.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a very useful tool.
It's a useful tool. It's wonderful for self-esteem when people are wanting to begin to develop a stronger self-esteem, to begin to rehearse the things that may be opposite of what so many people have told them for so long. And it's been playing in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a tool. That's all it is.
Another tool.
Another tool.
But another one that a lot of people have no concept or no experience with.
I mean, right.
You know,
right.
I have to say, I've seen it in a lounge act, and that's
right. Exactly.
You know, so.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I will not, Carter, if you come to see me, I will not make you quack like a duck.
Okay.
I promise.
Yeah.
Unless
yeah.
you want to.
Yeah. And that's my purpose in life. Right. You mentioned contacting you.
Yeah.
How if some of our listeners do want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Probably the easiest way for them to remember and to find me would just be going to drbrianhooper.com. drbrianhooper.com.
Okay.
And I am in an office building that's right across from the Kroger's supermarket on Harding at White Bridge.
Oh, okay.
In the westernly side of Nashville.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
West Nashville.
Right.
So, yeah, so they can Google you and
find me
your
that
office
way.
Address that
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
That way.
Yep.
Cool. Wonderful. And your practice is, like we said, it was very broad community practice. You work some with the church.
Right. I'm part-time with the church as the minister of pastoral care, which means I make home and hospital visits and train and supervise lay folks who do that as well for people who can't make it to church.
Right.
And then my private practice is, as I mentioned, over there on Harding.
Mm-hmm.
And work with individuals and couples, gay and straight. And I'm loving it. I'm just loving it. And I've felt very welcomed by Nashville. And I'm enjoying my time here.
Well, wonderful, wonderful. Well, you've certainly dived in with both feet, bringing the parents and everything.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful to have you here with us. Were there any other elements about your practice that you want to touch on that we might not have explained to our listeners today?
I think we've done a pretty thorough job, thanks to you, Carter. It's been easy to talk with you and share.
Oh, well, wonderful. You are just a golden-tongued devil, you. Oh, well, Brian Hooper, I want to thank you for joining me today on Queer Talk. Folks, we have been speaking with Brian Hooper, who is a fellow at the American Association of Pastoral Counselors and has a practice here in pastoral counseling and social?
No. My license is clinical pastoral therapist.
Clinical pastoral therapist. That's right. Where we are. I did want to get on that proper term. We have to keep you in the right category.
That's right.
Well, again, Brian, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Carter.
So, listeners, this has been another installment of Queer Talk Radio. Queer Talk Radio is a Joyce Arnold production. This is Carter Witt. Thank you for tuning in.